Take care of your business, your family, and yourself. Call your advisor or go to benefitsyouwant.com.
I'm Mike Pinball Clemens, and I'm just an average guy. I put my championship rings on one finger at a time, just like everybody else. I like lazy afternoons on the couch in my most comfortable suits, but my family car is anything but average. My wife, Diane, got her Lexus RX 350 from my winning team at Lexus of Oakville. With rates from 1.9% for 48 months, the RX 350 is family-friendly luxury. And your purchase helps Lexus of Oakville support the Mike Pinball Clemens Foundation for kids in need. See lexusofoakville.ca. for details.
CJCL Toronto, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Now, on 2020 Update.
It's been 4 days since the Maple Leafs season came to an end, but the wounds are still fresh, according to Sportsnet 590 The Fan's David Alter.
It was pretty clear that the disappointment of Game 7 and the pain resulting from it has yet to subside in the Leafs organization. Here's Randy Carlisle.
The situation you're in right after the game, your frustration, you're hurt, you're stunned, you're all of the words that you used to describe living that, and it's almost like you go into a state of depression.
Healing continues, and while there are a lot of positives, Carlisle added there is still lots to improve on.
Meanwhile, Tyler Bozak revealed that he suffered a torn oblique and left tricep in the final weeks of the season, but that he will not need surgery. Two NHL playoff games tonight as the Bruins host the Rangers in Game 1 of their best of seven. The Kings host the Sharks in Game 2 after LA took the opener. For the fourth consecutive year, Canada is done in the quarterfinals at the World Hockey Championship as they fell to Sweden 3-2 in a shootout. The other bad news was Eric Staal being forced to leave the game after a knee-on-knee hit from Alex Edler. The Phillies say Roy Halladay's shoulder surgery was a success. He'll begin a rehab program in 6 to 8 weeks. Blue Jays back at it tomorrow in New York against the Yankees. And in the NBA playoffs, the Warriors try to force a Game 7 with a win over the Spurs tonight. The Pacers can advance to the East Final with a Game 5 win over the Knicks. I'm Rob Wong on the home of the Blue Jays, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
This hour of Primetime Sports is brought to you by Legend Boats.
The most listened to sports radio program in Canada. It's What's for Dinner. Eat up. This is Primetime Sports with Bob McCowan on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome back to Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Simulcast on Sportsnet. Eric Smith filling in for Bob McCowan. McCowan under the weather today, so you've got me here until 7 o'clock. John Shannon co-hosting, joining me in studio, and you're shaking your head already. So the Bob,
under the weather.
I mean, you coming in, you're manned and ready. You've got the lozenges and the cough drops going.
I can only assume that it was a beautiful day to play golf. Well, I can only assume that, because it's a beautiful day to play golf.
And there is zero chance that he's in tomorrow, right? I mean, you got the chance to take the Friday of a long weekend combined with the Thursday. There is zero chance. Like, I'm here tomorrow probably.
Tea times, you know, Bob just walks out to the tea time. I mean, when would you like to play Mr. McCowan? So I don't understand what the issue is. I mean, we should all know that Bob's probably on about 17 right now and just finishing up and enjoying himself, and that's good. Have an adult beverage after.
Well, and he's on the schedule for Monday as well, so this could be really interesting. Because he already does get about 13 weeks vacation, from what I understand. And now you combine this with a super long weekend. Yeah. I don't know.
Super long.
Yes.
There's no such thing as weekends when it comes to sports. Are you kidding me? People expect to watch television all weekend long.
Well, you would know that from everything you've done in your career.
what I'm still doing.
And most people plow through.
Yeah.
You know,
well, he's going to blame me for giving him a cold.
See, we were talking off the air about on the Raptors plane. We like to hopefully, if we can, have an open seat. For anybody that's sick, we just call that the sick bay seat. You have to sit in that seat because otherwise it goes through. And Jonesy and I, Paul Jones, we've actually set up a little thing too because we're both very much hypochondriacs when it comes to getting sick.
Or OCD?
Stuff. Oh, absolutely.
Oh, okay.
Absolutely. We are the worst partners for each other when it comes to that.
Oh, God.
We set up
I don't travel anymore.
We set up the air wall.
So, oh, really?
So the vents, they always are closed. They're always closed because we don't want to recycle air on us. But if somebody behind us or in front of us is sick, and usually right behind us is Jack Armstrong and Matt Devlin, we set up the air wall and point the vents back at them so any nasty air is blowing directly onto them, not us.
Hey, by the way, speaking of Matt Devlin, I can't beat that. Matt sounded really good last night.
He did.
He was doing the TNT game. in Oklahoma City. Sounded great. It's always good to see local talent, local guys get some national exposure.
And he's been bouncing around a lot. This is, I think, the third different series that he's done over the course of the first couple of rounds. So he's been doing a lot of different stuff. And have you been watching? Because I know.
Oh, yeah.
It's hard, though, right? You're busy with the hockey, but you're also on the set, and you got to keep an eye on everything.
There's a TV going. There's an NBA
TV.
There's an NBA TV always going. There's just one, but there's an NBA TV always up. And the young guys and I, everybody looks at like we're nuts, but I have to watch the NBA. I love the NBA. I think it's great.
Well, there have been.
And as you know, when we all worked together I was there 2000 to 2006. I was at more Raptor games probably than I was more Leaf games.
Yeah.
And I love what the sport is and what the fans do at games. To me, it's one of the great sports.
Well, the problem is, obviously, for this team, as we've said ad nauseum, the team in this city, losing five straight years, or at least missing the postseason for five straight years, and, you know, five playoffs in 18 years, that's been the biggest issue of all.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. There's been so much talk about whether the ratings, television ratings for radio, the general interest outside of those that show up in the arena. How do you balance, in your mind, knowing what, again, you're doing still and what you used to do as well on an executive side.
Yeah.
The numbers and what the numbers tell you, and they're the cold, hard facts, versus what you think you see in the arena, and then tying into the advent and the absolute thrust of online. Because you think about the, and I'm not just saying for the Raptors, you could make the same case for the Leafs, for any sports team. The online communities, whether it be through Facebook, through Twitter, through chat rooms and message boards and everything else that you can't truly get a true number on sometimes, and how much does that play into, well, they might not be watching on TV, but they're following on their tablet as they're listening on the radio, or they're not even listening to the broadcast, but they're chatting with each other from around the world about our hockey team, our basketball team, our baseball team, et cetera.
I guess my question is as the, if I'm with the club or I'm with the network, how do I monetize that? How do I measure that? That's very difficult to do.
Mm-hmm.
I have more followers. I have more personal followers on Twitter than I would tell you that 10 games the Raptors had ratings this year. And that's abysmal. And we've talked about it on this show, that in many ways the Raptors are close to becoming a fringe sport in Toronto and in Canada simply because they're off the radar. They haven't won enough. I think there's a ton of people waiting for them to win, but they have put the guard up. And they've said, we're not coming back until you do turn it around and do win. And I think that reflects in everything. I mean there were nights this season on television where there were more people in the arena
mm-hmm.
than watched on television. That's not a good thing. That's a problem. And it has deteriorated quickly. And when we all talk about Tim Leiwicki coming and spending more attention and revitalizing basketball and to a lesser extent revitalizing soccer before the Leafs, well, that's where the attention needs to be because the Maple Leafs open the door and things happen. And really what's happened with the Maple Leafs now and what I was fascinated to see during this first round playoff series was it was all of Toronto embracing the Maple Leafs. It wasn't just white Anglo-Saxon men.
Absolutely right.
It was families. It was, you know, people from all different colors and creeds embracing the Toronto Maple Leafs. It's something that had happened in Vancouver over the last decade. It was one. So that to me tells me that all the Raptors really need to do is win, and win what I would describe as consistently.
Mm-hmm.
But until that time comes, it is going to be a real struggle. It's going to be a struggle for everybody around the club. It's going to be a struggle for the hardcore fan who is, you know, is paying the freight in many ways. But at the same time, you know, how many rebuilds can there be? How much patience can there be? In many ways, to me, what the Raptors are in Toronto is so comparable to what, for the sake of argument, the St. Louis Blues are in St. Louis. They are a great, entertaining team when they win. And when the Blues lose, nobody shows up. The Blues go through a bad cycle of missing the playoffs for 5 years. Nobody shows up. Ownership changes. Lots of issues. Coaches, managers get fired. That's not the case here because of stability of ownership and because of the umbrella and how
sure.
money has worked and rents worked. But at the same time, the reflection of a mid-market hockey city in the United States comparing what the Raptors do here, I think is pretty valid.
How much of it do you think plays in ultimately, and this is something I've said a lot, where you don't have the history of... Well, you have the least amount of history of the three major sports. You want to throw FC into the mix, okay, they trump you. But you haven't even been around for two decades yet. But 18 years is a long time. What do you do to get the guy in Halifax or Montreal or Edmonton or Calgary or Vancouver as opposed to even just worrying about your own backyard and the guy in Toronto and in the GTA? I mean, do things like a caravan and going out and shaking hands and kissing babies and signing autographs for a day for 24 hours help, or is it simply just winning? To me, the winning is what ultimately cures all for most teams and most sports.
I think everything helps, and I really do think that at a certain point there should be an outreach program. There probably should be a lot more discussion with Basketball Canada, which in many ways is probably in better shape when you think about
Who would have thought you'd be saying that?
I know.
Going back six months ago, 12 months ago.
In better shape for the next 3 years than the Raptors are when you consider the potential team that Canada could put on the court for Rio de Janeiro. But at the same time, you know, and I don't want to get into too many specifics because I remember the issues we had. But, you know, sports are appointment viewing. They're not, and because the hardcore 12,000 fans, the hardcore 13,000 fans, they can find my Raptor game. They can find it. But it's the guy who doesn't really get it. Oh, the Raptors are playing tonight. What channel is it on? And it's hard to find the channel.
Absolutely.
It's a disaster.
It's hard for me to find. And I am one of those hardcore guys.
Well, and so that's the other issue. I mean, And when you talk about content plays, and I do think that that's something that the new ownership at MLSE will have to address or will try to address somehow, is delivering Raptor content on a more consistent basis, on a more consistent level, whether that be moving Raptors 100% to the score, whether that be moving them somewhere else that dedicates a single channel to basketball. It's not a bad idea. It's not a bad idea. And if I'm Tim Leiwicki, I'm going to say, well, hold on now. We're where tonight? Why are we over here? Why are we over there? I mean, what's going on? I mean, and they have a very difficult task, and I understand it. I have been through it. A difficult task of moving between the Stanley Cup playoffs, the Blue Jays as an entity that are now a real broadcast entity, whether you like it or not, they're averaging 600,000 to 700,000 people. Even when they're not winning, they're over 1 million when they're on a roll. So that's a factor. So all of a sudden, where does basketball fit in the television landscape? Yep. Not necessarily in the sports fan landscape, but where does it fit in the television landscape? And that's a huge question. I guarantee you that the people at MLSE, the guys in the broadcast group, talk about it every day. I have been through the matrix of trying to schedule Raptors games and all key NBA games over certain issues. And it's not fun. And in the end, what you're trying to do is you're trying to satisfy your corporate partners, who you have guaranteed will give them ratings. And at the same time, you're also trying to guarantee that you're creating some continuity. And that to me is the biggest issue right now.
Okay, let me ask you this. Can you do any or all of that if the team is not better? Does it all come back to, if you're trying to satisfy corporate partners and generate new revenue and generate new sponsors and everything else, can you do any of that if the team on the floor is not better and is not showing significant improvement? Because how much of that is tied directly to, are you winning? Are you a playoff team? Do you have a future? Or are you going to continue to lose? Are you going through a rebuild? Are you tanking? Are you whatever? And if the product's not there, I don't want to spend money. I don't want to spend time. I don't want anything to do with it.
My answer is, if they were to do it, right now is the time. Because they do have the opportunity to hitch the Raptor wagon to the man who is supposed to be the greatest sports executive in North America today.
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to make a free throw. He's not going to go and play zone defense. He's not even going to be able to be sixth man. But you have to be able to tie the excitement and the future to what Tim Leiwicki will bring to the basketball organization. Otherwise, if you're relying on wins and losses, you are going to have to wait 2 or 3 years. And that, to me, is a really big issue. But the sell point for all the guys at MLSE, and they do a marvelous job, is a difficult one when it comes to the basketball. And the aspect has to be Rudy Gay is a pretty good player. Now, Memphis is a better team without Rudy Gay. I don't know what that means. And Tim Leiwicki has a vision for sports in this city, and we have to be patient. And Tim Leiwicki will be able to make some decisions that may cost money now that may be worth the investment for the next 2 or 3 years. And when I talk about investment, I'm talking about taking a chance and putting the team on a single channel at one point, or insisting they be on one channel. Those are the types of things.
It's going to be interesting to see what they do, because to go back to the point you made about hockey as well and what you saw from the Leaf fans, especially those not only in the arena but more so in Maple Leaf Square and walking the streets.
It was fantastic.
It was just a couple of years ago. You're talking about the multicultural vibe and the ethnicity, the diversity at a Raptor game.
Right.
Now we're talking about it from a Leafs perspective, or let alone FC. And go back to those old surveys and the old studies that were showing the number one and two participation sports in the country, soccer and basketball, and hockey falling down, everything else. But I can tell you, I know you're saying the same thing. I'm trumpeting what you said a couple of minutes ago, John, but I think a lot of fans that, maybe not the ones showing up in Maple Leaf Square, but driving around the neighborhoods that are flying the flag or have it in their car or talking about it around the water cooler at work, might not be your hardcore hockey fans, but because it was finally a winning team in this city and a team that you could get behind and a team that was a good story. I mean, half of the support for the Jays in the offseason was hope.
Correct.
It was the hope of they're going to be a very good team. They may be a World Series contender. Nobody knew.
Right.
It was the hope of being good and being relevant again, and the Leafs were finally good and relevant, and fans rallied behind that.
And they do have hope. I have to remind Leaf fans every once in a while, because everybody assumes because you live in Toronto, you're a Leaf fan.
Right.
There's that assumption. I'm a little more pragmatic about it. This team did not win a playoff series. This team, the Maple Leafs, has a ton of work to go. Would you have taken the Raptors getting to the playoffs and losing in a playoff series?
Absolutely.
Would you have taken it?
Absolutely.
And I think that,
especially in the fashion in which the Leafs lost, if the Raptors were to go to a game seven and lose in overtime after coughing up a by the way, the Raptors giving up a lead in the final minute of the game. There's a
something
a shocking
statement. Yeah, that's right. But I guess what I'm saying is that there's a core for the Raptors that's so small right now that MLSE, Leiwicki, and the basketball team have to find a way to resell themselves to the majority. I've told this story on this show many times. Vince Carter goes to North Carolina for graduation, comes to Philly for game 7.
Yep.
The ratings for that game on CTV were almost 1 million people. And I'm running Hockey Night in Canada at the time. I'm driving down the Gardner. My phone rings, and my research person says, by the way, John, the Raptors got 991,000 people watching basketball yesterday. And I'm scared. I'm scared because we didn't have, the Leafs weren't very good. We had a U.S. matchup in the Stanley Cups playoffs, and we were getting 1.617 for hockey at that point before the people meters. And I could hear basketball coming. I could hear it coming. If this team beats Philly, the numbers were going to be 1.2, 1.3,
sure.
and the momentum would carry over for years to come. They didn't win. The momentum died. Vince screwed it up. Management screwed it up. Everybody screwed it up at one point. But basketball had a chance to have a grip on this city particularly, and potentially the country. And you were worried. I know I was worried at that point, because you had to hope for the team performances of the Canadian teams.
Well, and we've talked about it a number of times in the past. To your point, it was even Kobe Bryant who, a couple of months after that, or even the next year in Sports Illustrated, talking about, had Tracy McGrady stayed, had the Raptors been able to keep that core of Vince Carter and Tracy McGrady together, I have no doubt that we would have been playing the Raptors for multiple years to come in the finals. So let me ask you, on that vein, to go back to what you said about the Leafs, and you're maybe not as, I think you said you're more pragmatic about things.
Very.
Okay. did the Leafs, by not closing out that final 125.
Best thing that ever happened to them.
Okay. Well, that's what I just said last hour, so at least I know I'm not a total fool.
No, no. It's the best thing that ever happened
to them. But let me ask you from a different angle, though. Using the Raptor example, the Leafs aren't going to fall off in popularity because of who they are in the blue and white, and you can print money.
Right.
However, did they fail to harness a window of opportunity in a shortened season by not advancing, by not moving on, that may not open up again next year or for another couple of years with a relatively young team that may not be as good as what they showed this year?
Well, if they didn't do that, and the team was unable to then perform at this level or better next year or the year after, then the shelf life of Dave Nonis and Randy Carlyle would have been very short. Part of this is creating 3 and 5 year expectations and managing plans. And had the Maple Leafs gone to the second round, potentially the third round, the expectation was that this is a Stanley Cup contender next year. And it's not a Stanley Cup contender. I mean, you saw and heard both Nonis and Carlyle this morning be very, very, be very honest with where they are. We need to make changes. We're not going to endorse anybody. There are no untouchables. They know where they need to go over the next 3 to 5 years. That, to me, in the end, and nobody will ever admit, because, I mean, the gate's probably about $5 million at MLSE, but nobody will say, well, that was the best thing that ever happened to them. But if you look at long-range planning and expectation, this was the best thing for the organization for a business sense, to manage expectation, to manage hope, to create interest. And now the storybook will continue. It's going to be magical for the next year based on the lovable loser.
I know what that feels like.
No, we're not talking about your dating life, Eric.
Oh, come on now. Come on. Well, neither am I. You want to get into that?
No. No, maybe we're talking about mine.
We'll talk more about the Toronto Maple Leafs, or more specifically, maybe we'll shift from the Leafs and get into the National Hockey League postseason with the teams that are still alive. Ed Olczyk from NBC Sports will join us later on in the program. When we continue, we'll shift our attention to the team that was once known as the Vancouver Grizzlies, now sitting in the Western Conference Final.
Grizzlies beat Sonics. Yep. Vancouver beat Seattle last night. It's fantastic.
Think about how rabid it would have been in Key Arena. Well, that's another issue we could talk about as well. Seattle and the Sacramento Kings staying in Northern California. A lot to come before 7 o'clock. John Shannon, Eric Smith filling in for Bob McCowan. It's Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, simulcast on Sportsnet.
It's Brady and Lang in the morning. Tomorrow morning, 5:30 to 9. Now more of what you want to hear on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome back to Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, simulcast on Sportsnet. Eric Smith in for Bob McCowan. Bobcat under the weather, maybe back tomorrow, but we're not holding our breath for that. John Shannon with me till 7 o'clock. The Memphis Grizzlies. Yes, that same team that was once in Vancouver. And the only sweet vindication I feel a little bit today is at least the Memphis Grizzlies did it not under the ownership of Michael Heisley, who completely duped everybody in Vancouver and stole their team from them. But I digress. The Memphis Grizzlies have advanced to the Western Conference Final, waiting to see if they will play the San Antonio Spurs or the Golden State Warriors in the final. Last night, Chicago losing to Miami as well, John. So the Heat punched their ticket to a third straight Eastern Conference Final. So we will talk about all of that, including something, near and dear to a lot of people's hearts as fans, let alone as hockey fans, maybe even, that we're keeping an eye on what happened with Seattle and Sacramento. A lot of different issues and topics to get into with national NBA writer from Yahoo Sports, Mark Spears. Spearsy, how are you tonight?
Go Sharks. Okay. Go Sharks.
Go Sharks. Can you not like anything LA? Is that the thing?
Say what?
You can't like anything LA. You've got to stay, you've got to stay committed to San Francisco.
It's the only pro team we got.
Well, you know what?
We got stuff down the street, but
and Mark, it's a fun place to go too.
I've been to one game ever.
Oh, come on!
The thing is this, and I don't know. No, I didn't come here to talk about hockey, but I figured in Canada they wouldn't mind. they didn't show up till I was like a young adult, like till I was in college.
Right.
So I didn't grow up with it. So it didn't have the same, like everybody like from my era and older, unless you like stay in San Jose or something like that, and they don't really claim them because they weren't around.
I can absolutely understand that.
You know, California hockey just doesn't sound right, does it?
Hey, the home of the Stanley Cup champions. I mean, that's the hard part. That's the hard part for a lot of us to swallow, Mark.
Yeah, it's too warm to have hockey here.
Now, let me ask you, will there be more people sort of interest, or will interest be generated that much more for just the sports fan in that area, in the Bay Area overall, with the new arena that's ultimately coming for the Warriors? Would we ever look to see that San Francisco would try to get in on any kind of hockey action, or would it generate the sports fan that much more with all of the sports right down on the Bay, right against the water like that?
You know what? I actually think they'll stay in San Jose, and the reason is, I mean, they're packed every night. And they have a very nice arena that has received a lot of awards, and it's theirs. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, the Sharks ownership owns the arena too?
No, it's city-owned, but they control the lease.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You go on to San Francisco, that's the Warriors building.
Oh, no question. Now, speaking of the Warriors.
But that being said, who knows when that shovel actually goes in the ground? I mean, there's so many things and obstacles they got to jump over to get to just taking out some dirt. I don't even know if and when they'll get done.
Okay, speaking of the Warriors, are they done?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. And it's not because of their talent or lack thereof. It's just they're just too beat up.
Yeah.
It's just one day off in between games. I think it's just too hard for them to overcome right now. Stephen Curry is really, really hobbled. He almost looks like his pops at the end of his career, you know, just can't really, you know, having a hard time getting open. I mean, he looks like an older version of himself because, you know, early in the series, last series, he's doing all that curly nail dribbling stuff, getting free. Nobody can stop him. I don't care who you put on him, and now he can't get an inch, man. So with him having to fly back, with him having just a day off in between, I can't, unless, you know, something dramatically happened over the last 24 hours, I can't see him being much different, nor Bogut.
Speaking with Mark Spears from Yahoo Sports. Spears, let me ask you, John mentioned in our last segment, we were talking a little bit about the Toronto Maple Leafs and ultimately their loss in Game 7 to the Bruins, but how that may have been long-term the best thing for them, tempering expectations of the fan base of a young team that you hope just gradually gets better as opposed to bursting onto the scene and suddenly folks expect more. Could you make a case sort of similar to Golden State in that they're a very young team, but they're not quite ready for prime time yet? They're not a championship contending team with so many young pieces that maybe, hey, great first round win, nice little tease for a couple of games against San Antonio, but this might be, in the long run, the better thing for them to kind of manage the expectations of a fan base that's very good, but that doesn't get ahead of itself with this young core.
Oh, no, they're getting ahead of themselves. They were talking about a championship a week ago.
Well, they're crazy then.
Yeah, one of the local columnists wrote about a parade, and I'm like, what you mean, a Puerto Rican parade or Juneteenth parade in San Francisco? I don't know about no championship parade. But the thing is, though, I actually think it's injuries right now that's killing them more than anything than their lack of experience. That being said, those injuries have allowed Harrison Barnes over the last couple games to really show what he's capable of doing. I don't think what you're seeing from him is a fluke or just him just getting the ball because other guys are hurt. I really think he's that good. And so to me now, with their experience, if that team is healthy next year, they're tough, man. They're really tough. Now, that being said, you know, they got some key free agents in Jared Jack and Carl Landry, and I wouldn't be surprised if your Raptors really try to get Carl Landry. They want a veteran power forward, and I think Bargnani's played his last game. But so those two guys, I think, could very well be gone, going to get paid. But they're starting five. I'd dare to find another starting five in a league, if healthy, better than theirs. I think it'd be really tough.
So if they're so banged up in this series, how banged up are the Spurs?
they're in good shape. They're not really hurting anymore. I mean, they just had the injury to Splitter. Ginobili and Parker had injuries late in the regular season, but they seem to have shaken those off. So I think the Spurs are relatively healthy right now. I mean, Popovich talked about it the other day that, you know, this is about as healthy as this team has been in a while.
Talking to Mark Spears from Yahoo Sports, the NBA postseason in well underway. The Knicks facing elimination tonight, down 3-1 to the Indiana Pacers, and game six of that series between the Warriors and Spurs going this evening as well. We saw the Grizzlies advance last night, knocking off the Thunder. Obviously, the impact of losing Russell Westbrook plays into that, but I want to move off the court for a second. Derek Fisher, remember that Thunder team, eliminated last night with the Thunder. Billy Hunter, the former head of the NBAPA, now suing Derek Fisher and the PA for defamation and contract breach. Spearsy, does he have a legitimate case here in trying to go after Fisher, who allegedly tried to negotiate and come up with a deal that would have benefited the players back in 2011 behind the back, essentially, you know, trumping Hunter and his role as the lead of that union?
That's a tough one, man. It's a lot of finger pointing, a lot of he said, she said, he said, he said, you know, and I don't think that's going to be solved anytime soon. Could there be some merit to it? Yes, but it's certainly a curious situation that's going to get uglier and uglier, especially after Billy lost his job. So he's probably at a point now where he's trying to recoup anything he can. His name is damaged. His reputation is damaged. Most of it's self-induced. What is he going to do from here? What are some of his family members that were benefiting going to do from here? I don't know. But that's an ugly situation that I hope I don't have to get too involved with.
Hey, Mark, if we just assume for a second that even the allegations are true, that Derek Fisher tried to do this and tried to get a deal done and it was behind his back and whatever, where's the line between the lawyer, the fat cat, the guy that's the ultimate leader of the union in Billy Hunter at the time, and the player's representative, who is the president, who is also representing his fellow players and trying to get a deal done? If one guy could get a deal done and one guy is actually a player in the league and thinking that he's speaking for the players and felt there was a deal to be had, should that not be part of his job to get that done?
That was a real confusing question.
I'm saying, should it not be...
I don't know what you're asking.
I'm saying, should Derek Fisher not have that power to be able to sign a deal, to speak on behalf of his players, to go out and negotiate a deal and not have to go through Billy Hunter as the figurehead if he felt that that was the best deal that was there to be had? Because everybody and their uncle seemed to be on different pages,
yeah,
including Billy Hunter, at the time that we were going through this mess and we were talking to you on a regular basis.
Very convoluted inside baseball type situation.
Probably why I had a convoluted question for you, I guess.
Yeah, and it's, I don't know if we have the time to go through the whole thing. I mean, we'll have to look at documents and pages. And
we only have 2 hours.
So. Yeah. I don't know that the people there care that much about it because these guys are getting paid so much. That's how I always kind of looked at the lockout. The fans don't care. They just want to know when you're playing.
Hey, Mark, speaking of teams and speaking of situations, is it a good thing Sacramento's staying now?
Selfishly, I think so. They're down the street from me. It gives me more games to go to. But I think ultimately 5-6 years from now will be a good thing all around because they'll have a new arena, which will be the crown jewel of the city, which will basically make the city much different than it is now, make it a potential destination place to go because their downtown certainly needs a lot of work, and it'll be kind of like what happened to Memphis's downtown or Oklahoma City in a lot of ways. There'll be things that'll grow from it that will benefit the city and make it a more appealing place. And if, you know, the NBA, once this new television deal is done in 2016, where they're going to get a bunch more money, because expect NBC and Fox and CBS to really fight ESPN and try to take the NBA away. I think Turner will be fine because of their association with NBA TV and because of the stuff they produce for the NBA. I think Turner will keep its rights, but ESPN is going to have to fork over a lot of money with a lot of competition. I think with the influx of money that's going to come in, they'll be more comfortable adding one or two expansion teams. There's the markets that want them. And I was kind of surprised that the commissioner-to-be, more or less promise the team to Seattle in the future. So that's why I'm saying 5 years from now, I expect two expansion teams in Sacramento to have a brand new arena, and everybody will be happy. So while Seattle's in pain now, if what Adam Silver said rings correct, there'll be a basketball team still in SAC, and there'll be a basketball team in Seattle too.
Spearsy,
in the future.
Appreciate the time as always. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk again soon.
Man, y'all tough. I got to prepare. I got to get my CBA together before I talk to you guys. You guys are tough.
Appreciate the time, man. We'll talk again soon. There's Mark Spears, national NBA writer for Yahoo Sports. I got, as he said, convoluted situation. I didn't think my question was confusing, but it, you know, maybe I need some work then, I guess.
Well, you've been off for a while. You know, Raptors haven't played for a while. You got to get back into
the rust is there. I just think that if there's a guy that's working to represent the players, I trust him. If I'm a player, I trust the player to know what's right for
really,
me.
It depends what Billy Hunter's contract says.
Yeah.
And we don't know that.
But was Billy Hunter looking up for Billy Hunter, or was Billy Hunter looking up for the players?
Based on the fact that
he doesn't have a job anymore?
Well, based on the fact that half of his family had jobs too, I think that...
Hence the reason I would trust Derek Fisher more than anybody else.
Yeah, that's a strange one. That's for sure.
We'll continue to talk about that probably in the coming days. It's going to be something you'll hear a lot about with Billy Hunter suing the NBAPA and Derek Fisher for defamation and contract breach. When we continue, we talked about winning teams in the city. Well, there is a team that has got a 4-game winning streak in hand right now, but they're trying to climb out of the big hole that they dug early in the season. Mike Wilner from the Blue Jays broadcast crew from Sportsnet 590 The Fan will join us when we continue on Primetime Sports. John Shannon, Eric Smith on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, simulcast on Sportsnet.
UFC Central with Showdown Joe tonight at 9. Now more great sports talk on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
The heart is a blue.
Welcome back to Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, simulcast on Sportsnet. Eric Smith in for Bob McCowan. John Shannon with you here till 7 o'clock. And joining us on the line right now, member of the Blue Jays broadcast crew on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, as the Jays have the off day, get set for the weekend series against the New York Yankees, Mike Wilner. Mike, I think if you were looking at the schedule at the beginning of the season and staring at a series over the course of Victoria Day weekend against the Yankees, many felt that the records either would have been flipped for these two teams or that this series would have a lot more meaning in terms of two teams going toe-to-toe as opposed to the Jays, granted, in the midst of a 4-game winning streak, still trying to climb out of the basement of the AL East.
Yeah, I don't think the second one at all. I think the first, you're absolutely right. I mean, most people that you talk to thought the Yankees were pretty much a guaranteed 90-loss team this year, that they were going to be awful. And that the Blue Jays were going to be quite good. So I think when you look at this, and remember, too, we were talking about how they had 10 games against the Yankees before Granderson and Teixeira and Jeter and Alex Rodriguez were back, and how the Blue Jays were going to really take advantage of that. And now these are games 8, 9, and 10, and Granderson is back, but the other guys aren't. I think most people would have said, yeah, records flipped. Blue Jays are in first, 10 games over 500. Yankees are scrambling.
And the Yankees have done it with a little bit of Blue Jay talent on the on the roster, too, when you consider Vernon. And
a lot.
Well, but how have they done it? I mean, are we talking about a bunch of overachievers now?
Oh, I think so. I mean, Vernon Wells, I'm a big fan of Vernon Wells, and I always have been. But in 2011 and 2012, Vernon Wells was arguably the worst hitter in Major League Baseball, in certainly relative to expectations, he was the worst hitter in Major League Baseball by a ton.
Right.
And he's had this resurgence. I talked to him. He says something's different when you put on this jersey, when you put on this uniform. Something happens to you, and I don't know. You know, I don't believe in that sort of magic, but Lyle Overbay has, what, 6 home runs already for the Yankees, and Vernon's got 10, and he's playing second, and he's playing third in blowouts, and it's crazy. But I think what it might be is that they know that the team's really only counting on him for a couple of months until, you know, Vernon was supposed to be until Granderson got back, but obviously he's earned more playing time. Overbase, just until Mark Teixeira gets back. Jason Nix, hold the fort for us until Jeter or Rodriguez come back. And these veteran guys maybe understand that if they don't have to pace themselves, they can just, I don't know, be different for a couple of months and play better since it's only for a couple of months. It's the only thing I can think of, to be honest with you.
Mike, I continue to say at the beginning of the season, and I'm sure you probably did as well to some degree, that I didn't have a problem with the losses as much as I did with the losses that were piling up, pushing the team further and further below 500, even the first 10 games, let alone the first 15. Because the issue you have is, it, you know, it's that much harder to get back to 500, let alone above. Now you're starting to see them on a bit of a win streak, but still seven below 500. They're winning on nights where the Baltimore loses, Boston loses. They're making up ground. But you've got every other team in the division above 500 at this point. How would you break down the schedule? You're at the quarter pole now. Are you breaking it into 10-game chunks, into weekly series? How do you do it right now if you're John Gibbons trying to manage this season and trying to get this team over the long haul to maybe still be in the conversation and make something of this year still?
I don't know if you even break it into chunks. John Gibbons has said many times, look, we're trying to win tonight, and tomorrow's not here yet. Yesterday's gone. We're worried about tonight and only tonight. Now, obviously, you can't manage every game as though it's an elimination game and not save some bullets for later. But I really do think you just have to concentrate on that night. Bautista said it a couple of weeks ago. We can't think about winning series even at this point. We just have to win tonight. And it's not going to happen all the time. I don't know. You break it down into 10-game chunks, and you're going to say, well, they've got to win 6 out of every 10 from here on in to get themselves as a factor in a race. And that's true,
yep.
But there are going to be some times where they don't, where they only win 4 out of 10, where they only win 3 out of 10. One hopes there are also going to be times when they win 8 and 9 out of 10. Because, you know, if the team is this good, it's going to have to do this in certain periods of time. I don't know that it's a good idea to grab a chunk and say they have to do this, otherwise they're screwed. I think you just kind of have to slowly work your way back to 500. Don't worry about what the other teams in the division are doing, because if you're going to play well enough to get back to 500 and then make yourself a force later, then you're going to be taking them out a little.
You know, you go 2 or 3 for every series, you're back in the business pretty quickly.
Yeah, and I don't even think you have to do that. Get to 500 by July 1st and you're fine.
Mike, appreciate the time as always, and stay away from the shish kebab this weekend. Burley and Carota going tomorrow in the first game of the series. Yankees and Jays back with the Network Hour when we continue primetime sports on The Fan.